My name's Chip, I'm an addict. First of all, I need to apologise to anybody I have spoken to this evening. I may have given you the impression that I was interested in what you were talking about. I couldn't give a fuck. I may even have commiserated with you and said how sorry I was about your predicament. I wasn't. I am a bundle of nerves. I've never been to this meeting before, and it feels intimidating. I know it says that it doesn't matter how much we used or what we used, etc., but I need to let you know that I'm a proper addict. By proper addict, I mean before mobile phones. When you actually had to go out and score drugs. And you were given handfuls, you were not given handfuls of needles and syringes and had to make the same spike last about 15 times. It feels much easier to be an addict nowadays, but I'm sure it's just as hard. But I would love to have not had to go round dealers at 7 o'clock in the morning, despite them saying, do not come round before 11, and shouting through the letterbox, I promise I won't use your bathroom, please, I mean, and sort of seeing the curtain twitch and knowing that they were in there and then having to do the sort of the walk of shame as you walked up the pavement to try and find the next letterbox to shout through. I enjoyed my drugs, but I absolutely despised everything that went with it. And my drug use lasted 20 years. There was a time in my life I would have told you I was quite a normal individual. I came from an unbelievably dysfunctional family. I was sexualized at the age of 6. And the problem was that I enjoyed it. And it's only today that I've said that. But I can remember feeling the comfort of a human touch. But anyway, it wasn't great. And then I went to boarding school and was sexualized again on a regular basis. So by the time I got to be let loose on the world, I felt very damaged. And I was very good at putting on a good exterior. But there was an emptiness inside me that drugs filled beautifully and wonderfully. And having discovered that something made me feel good for 1 hour of the day, I wanted to feel like that 24 hours of every single day, and very, very quickly made it my full-time occupation. It took me to all the stereotypical places that addiction takes you. I was a very stereotypical addict. Spent a lot of time running errands for my dealer, cleaning his kitchen, trying to make myself useful, talking shit to his girlfriend who was still in bed, just sort of trying to ingratiate myself so that I could get a little bit of credit extra. My using was never glamorous. It was always scuzzy little deals. And I never, ever achieved a sort of position of being able to deal myself. I was always seemed to be on the receiving end of it. And I really didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed the first few years, maybe the first year, but I didn't enjoy the rest. And it always felt very lonely and, And I suppose when I first came into recovery, I suppose like all of us, I was able to dress up those experiences into something entertaining because that was all I had. All I had were these entertaining little vignettes from my using that were actually unbelievably dull events. But I could sort of dress it up and make it exciting, you know. I don't know, like the time that Mad Dave and I went out to school one day. Mad Dave introduced himself as Mad Dave. He, I, and Scabby Ian, who also introduced himself as Scabby. Hi, I'm Scabby Ian. Hi. Would do deals, and one day a deal went wrong, and Mad Dave got aggravated and came back with a gun and pointed a gun at my head for about half an hour, and very frightening half hour, while Mad Dave ranted about the £10 fucking deal that we'd done, and I managed to calm him down, and he disappeared. He came back again about 3 hours later, and being the sort of logical, rational addict that I was, when he said, "Fancy coming out on a job?" I went, "Yeah, sure, it sounds like a plan. Let's go out and do that." For which I got 3 years, so that wasn't a very good plan. I'm really loath to kind of try to... I don't like talking about my using. It was shit. It was... every day was shit. It was, as I said, before mobile phones, traipsing... Not only before mobile phones, but the fucking television went off at 12 o'clock, right? So when you've just whacked up a whole lot of speed and the television goes off at 12 o'clock and you've got nothing, there's no porn, there's nothing to do, I can assure you, you get into some funny headspaces. So count yourself, count your blessings. It was just endless kind of running around, as I said, kind of ingratiating myself and, you know, collecting together sort of some free books, a broken iron, a bit of change, some clothes that I'd nicked from somewhere else, and sort of accumulating it into a £10 deal. Sitting around at the dealer's pre-mobile phone, giving him money and him not going away. You know, you don't see him for 7 hours. You sit around in the house for 7 hours. He comes back into the room, goes into the back. Another hour goes by while we all know exactly what he's doing. He's trampling all over the gear like nobody's business. And then he comes out and he gives you a quarter of a gram for which you paid for half a gram. And you go, "Oh, thanks very much." Thinking, "You fucking shit." But not daring to say that because... I've just realised that a text... Before I got asked to do this, there's a text that said, "Please make sure that your language is not explicit." I wasn't quite... I suppose fuck is included in that, which... because they said it may affect the sales of the... CD or something, so I now know that my tape or USB or whatever it is going to be in the far corner of this dusty vault where these speaker tapes are kept. One day somebody will go there and find this and they go, "What's this?" Chip, he said, "Fuck." I don't like glamorising my using it. I was a horrible person. I was a nasty person. I would knock over old ladies in the street, knowing full well what I was doing, and I wasn't a pleasant person. had a child who her mother was an addict, I was an addict. We were living in a squat off the Edgware Road. I decided that it would be a good idea whilst my wife was not... Oh, she's not my wife, thank God she's not my wife. I have been married four times, but that's, we'll come to that at another time. But the woman who bore my daughter was not my wife. While she was in hospital, I thought it would be a good idea to paint the flat. So, of course, when you're painting and decorating, the first thing you do is go out and buy speed. And then you buy the paint, etc., etc. I don't know if any of you have ever tried painting on vast quantities of amphetamines, but sooner or later the silverfish appear and these little bugs start appearing. And I can distinctly remember I had the paintbrush on the end of a pole because I knew that if I had got too close to all the insects that were on the wall I was painting, they would work their way into me. As my young daughter is brought into the flat, I was in my underpants, as all speed freaks always were. With a paintbrush on the end of a pole, painting a cupboard, which was full of silverfish and God knows what else. And that was my daughter's welcome to the world. Outraged that social services would even contemplate coming and taking her away from me. Really, genuinely outraged that they would do so. And she had a very stereotypical sort of junkie life. So then I was fortunate enough to have somebody who I used to use with come round to my house. And this was when the fellowship had just started. The first meeting I went to, when I went to the first meeting, there were only five meetings in the whole of the UK. And this guy I had used with, and so I knew that he was as, you know, I couldn't do that way, you'd never use as much as me routine. And he looked clean, and he had a car outside which worked, which I found amazingly impressive. And he said, you know, got to stop using drugs, which was a concept that had never, ever entered my head. I really don't think it had ever entered my head to stop using drugs. Swap drugs, for sure, that had entered my head, and I often did that, but to actually stop using drugs, that had never entered my head. And so he challenged me. He was inspiring, but he challenged me because I was a very vocal addict. I had opinions about the fucking revolution and socialist, capitalist landlords. You can't have my rent because you're a capitalist swine. Actually, I've spent it on drugs, but we'll forget that bit. You're actually a capitalist swine, and I'm a I'm a revolutionary, and you're not going to get your fucking rent, so piss off. I was a very vocal addict. I had an opinion about everything. So it was very difficult for me to come off my soapbox and to say, do you know what? I know fuck all. I know nothing. I haven't got a clue how to stay clean. I know how to break into buildings. I know how to, scam people. I know how to do all these things. I know how to survive in prison. I know how to do this. I know how to do that. I haven't got a clue how to lead life. And I was pretty sure that if you took the drugs away from me, I was going to be a sort of social cripple, and that scared me. And so I gave up the drugs. I went to detox. I was really, really lucky. I may be pre-mobile phone, but I tell you what, in those days there were only two rehabs anyway, but if you turned up and you were on benefits, you could get treatment, and that's what I did. It was fantastic. So I got detoxed and turned into a social cripple. Hadn't got a clue what to do, and although I did get really quickly, I want this. I want recovery. And in many ways, I was a really kind of good client in this rehab, except for the one about sex. I hadn't had sex for a long time, and this girl touched me under the table. I fell in love. As you would. And we had some beautiful moments in the boiler room downstairs. Moments that linger still in my memory. Wonderful times. But I was in love. I mean, it's... didn't last. I stayed clean. And I just found early recovery, I mean, just a nightmare, to be honest. Bless newcomers. I really hope we all treat... Because I struggled like mad. I just felt really, really, really uncomfortable. I mean, there was not a moment of my life when I felt at ease. How was I sitting? You know, was I sitting looking relaxed and interested? Was I paying the right amount of attention? I would often be next to somebody who'd be going, or they'd sit me next to somebody who was really angry or crying, just as a test to see how I would... Because they were always looking at me. They weren't looking at the person who was really angry or crying. They were looking at me to see how I reacted to these situations. Because it was just like everything was about me. It was like... So you had to, you know, where did you sit? Did you sit at the back? Did you sit at the back and sort of then when you shared, everybody turned round? Or did you sit at the front and then everybody looked at the back of your neck? And it was just really difficult. And I found the idea of sort of standing around after meetings really, really hard. But for one reason or another, I kept coming back. And... started to do the steps because I wanted what people had. There were only, as I said, there was only one meeting a day in London, and I went to it, and I wanted what these people had, and they said if you do the steps, you'll do it. Now I am a rabid atheist. I am fully signed up. I am the Hitler of atheists. I am. I have no belief whatsoever in God of any kind at all. But I absolutely get that I need help. And I need help from people who I can talk to and get advice from. And there have been a couple of occasions in my recovery when I've really, really needed that. And the fellowship has really come through for me. So for me, working the first three steps was just about being prepared to sit and listen and take guidance and try and ask for help and to follow the suggestions that were put in front of me. I put off doing a fourth step for a while because most of the people who talked about fourth steps were sitting at the back slashing their wrists with a razor blade, going, I've never been so depressed in all my life. This is the worst moment I've ever had ever. I'm doing my fourth step. So that put me off for a while until I realised the problem was it's just hard work. That's all. It requires quite a lot of writing and we're not very good at that, or I'm not very good at that. But I did it, and I told my sponsor all this stuff that I had never told anybody else, which was a wonderful and great relief because he was a fabulous sponsor and he accepted me, and that was great. And then I found out a lot about myself. I found out that basically I was incredibly impatient. I was very controlling, and I was unbelievably oversensitive. And 32 years later, I am still impatient, controlling, and oversensitive. I'm better, But they're my sort of major defects. I've always I've defined defects in the past as either lettuce leaf defects or toothache defects. Lettuce leaf defects are, you know, when you get a bit of lettuce leaf caught in your teeth, you don't know it's there, but everybody else can see it. Everybody else is thinking, oh shit, Chip, you've got some lettuce in your teeth, I can see it so fucking clearly, I can see it right there. I'm not sure whether I want to tell you or not. I think I'll try and hope it'll pass. I hope it'll go away. Oh no, it's still there. Oh God, I know. Somebody else can tell him. I'm not going to tell him. And so I blithely go on all through the day, and then I get home in the evening and think, shit, I've got something. Now there's those kind of defects that everybody can see, and they're obvious to everybody, and sometimes people tell me and usually they don't. And then there's the toothache defects, which I know about. You can't see it, but I know it hurts like hell. And those are the definitions I have. And what I've come to do, I think, is to, over the years, I've come to embrace myself much more as a human being. I think we make unbelievable demands on ourselves as recovering addicts. I mean, it's a fucking miracle that we're all sitting here tonight clean. And yet, on top of that, we expect ourselves to behave like abnormal people, you know, who don't ever get angry or, you know, I'm really judgmental. I mean, I can be driving along the road, wanker. I haven't even know them from that. I can be just wrong shoes, tosser. I mean, I'm just, I am really, really judgmental. And I'm always putting stuff on Facebook and people go, ooh, where's your humility? Or something like that. Oh, come on, guys. Come on. You know, this is... life is there to be enjoyed. And I don't want to be sort of constant. I know that I've got to work on stuff. I want to work on stuff. But I don't want to become so sort of rigid and uptight. And I have, I hope, over time come to kind of be able to laugh at myself and to be able to kind of just kind of, yeah, I am still controlling, I am still desperately oversensitive, I'm still unbelievably impatient, but I'm a lot of other things as well. I mean, I've been married twice in recovery, and I'm on good relationships with both wives, and I live with one, and I speak to the other one almost every day, and we have a beautiful son, but I've also had some bad times in recovery, always about relationships. It's always the worst time I've ever had in recovery was when I was about 6 years clean. I thought I was invincible. I thought nothing can touch me. I am untouchable. Nothing's going to get to me. I don't think I've shared this before, but anyway. I was going out with this girl. I was in love. I'd been in love with her for a year. I had such strong feelings for her. She was the most wonderful person ever. And I was working in the field. I was running a halfway house down in Clapham, and I don't know why I'm telling you this, but we hadn't seen each other for the weekend. So I came into work on Monday morning. I don't know if any of you are familiar with facilities and rehabs, but I was the counsellor, and hi everybody, how's your weekend been? And this Spanish guy, fucking Spaniards, he said, oh, what have you got to say? How was he? He said, I fuck your girlfriend on Saturday. and I fuck her on Sunday too. And oh, thanks for sharing that. And then reality hit, and oh fuck, Jesus, I've got to get out of here. And I emotionally collapsed for a long time. I absolutely collapsed. You know, I now know it had a lot to do with all, you know, abandonment of my mother and all sorts of stuff like that. But I mean, I really collapsed. And the beautiful thing for me was that, as I said earlier on, my fellowship is about you people. And I was in that halfway house. I made a phone call. I said, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but this Spanish guy has just told me that he's fucked Jessica at the weekend. And I'm in bits. And by the time I got home to Westbourne Grove, it was about 40 minutes, there were 9 fellowship members outside my door. And they just looked after me, they stayed with me, and they comforted me through the next 2 or 3 weeks. And they let me cry, and they let me... And it was the most really beautiful thing for me, because I had always thought, you know, my higher power is about people. I wonder if they'll come through. And they did. And I still remember it really clearly, how beautiful it was to walk up that road and see people waiting for me at a time when I really needed support. I've been married, and I, you know, we had a lovely fellowship wedding, and it didn't work out. And my son was about 2, and I thought, oh Christ, this is going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. But thank God, his mum is a wonderful woman, and we really worked it out. And we've looked after him together, basically, in a funny sort of way. And I've subsequently married again, and I'm still desperately overseen. That must be a nightmare to have a relationship with. I like to present to the world that I'm really kind of on top of things, but, you know, my wife's only got to say some tiny little thing like, oh, God, I don't know, you forgot to put the bins out or some shit like that. And I'm... I want everybody to like me. I still want everybody to like me. I don't like the idea of not being liked. I can't stand it. But I have 5 minutes left. I have worked the steps. I've done all the steps. Step 11 is hard work for an atheist, I can tell you. But I consider the bigger my phone bill, the more I'm working, I'm in contact with my higher power, which is about people. I try to carry a message. I've tried all my recovery to carry a message. And I used to hear people, when I first came around, I used to hear people at meetings talk about having a home. And I'd think, you fucking tosser. If you got any idea, I'm living in a little bedsit off the Cromwell Road. Don't talk to me about shit like that, because that's never going to happen to me. And I know it's a real sort of recovery cliche, but I have got everything I could ever, ever have dreamt of in my life. I've got a lovely home. I've got a wife who loves me. I've got children who love me. I've got a job I love. I've got friends. I've got just... It's just lovely. I just... And all I've had to do is just rock up at these meetings. That's all I've had to do. I really haven't had to do really much more than that. I just have to show up. And even if Spanish people fuck your girlfriends, you don't have to use, I didn't think I'd be able to survive something like that, but I can. It's, you can survive anything as long as you just have people around you. And but I've realised, I have to do the work. I have to kind of make sure I've got my little support system around me. It's funny, what I said today is completely different to what I thought I was going to say. But I suppose I do want to say that you can be an atheist and you can be part of this fellowship. For some reason, that's always been important for me to say that, because I think a lot of people get put off by the word God. Some people don't, and that's fine. But I did. And it annoys me that I have to do, all right, it's not God, it's people, and do all that, and they're never going to change it, despite what I think. How long have I got? 3 minutes. Last chance. I was lying on bed one day, thinking about the slogans that we see around the room. Live and let live and all that sort of thing. And I came up with one. And I have been trying the whole of my recovery to get it accepted by the fellowship. If you share, you repair. Okay. It's got all the elements of a good, of a good saying. Short, it's brief, it rhymes, and it's meaningful. Right? And I thought of this. This is a slogan. This is going to get accepted. And I went trotting off to my meeting that day. And I thought, now how can I make out that I'm just actually haven't pre-planned this? This actually spontaneously come to me in the meeting. And I managed to have an addict. I was on the bus today. I came to the conclusion: if you share, you repair. Absolute silence. No, I thought there was going to be at least a standing ovation. At least somebody's going to come up to me and say, fucking hell, shit, that's something. Do you mind? Do you mind if we use that and put it on the wall? And nobody's ever said that. I've been trying all my recovery to get it accepted. But basically, that's my message. So, I love my life. And as the previous speaker said, I feel strong today. And it was really lovely to hear you say that, because I didn't when I was using, and I do today, and I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you.